Good morning. I'm Frank Vaughn. Welcome to September. It is, of course, the first day of that month, 2026. And we'll start with last night. We had some by-elections here in Canada. There aren't really any surprises to anybody who's watching this channel. The Liberals swept. They swept North Vancouver. Not really a surprise, but 58.6% of the vote. That's an enormous margin. 55.7% Beaches East York. Again, not really a surprise. But Chicoutimi left Fjord at 51.3% and the Bloc Quebecois coming in at 32.9% is a bit of a surprise to me. If there was a budding, if there is a large amount of support for the Bloc Quebecois in Quebec, I believe it's called the Parti Quebecois, provincial level, to come into power, replace the CAQ, one of the best acronyms in politics. And of course, the Parti Quebecois represents the sovereignist urge at the provincial level. And the Bloc, of course, is that French Bloc that gets sent to Ottawa to try and wrangle more concessions out of the federal government, usually at Alberta and Saskatchewan's expense, and send the proceeds of those concessions back to Quebec. Now, I want to switch to my Twitter for a second. I'm going to just read my summary last night, a Liberal by-election sweep by commanding margins. It shouldn't surprise anyone. The big red machine rules the majority in 2026. Federalism is surging, and my incredulity is powerless to stop it. It doesn't matter how many things I present in these videos. It doesn't matter how articulate I am. I could probably go on every single channel, and I could say all the things that circulate in my brain, and I wouldn't be able to make a dent because the hatred of the Orange Man is so pervasive and so strong and so effective as a political force. The big red machine sits atop that heap, so much so that so-called conservative premiers like Doug Ford are more than happy to align with their so-called political enemies to score cheap political points. Doug Ford's on his way to securing another majority. How? Simply by memeing against the president. The big red machine has hypnotized everybody. Now, there are some rebuttals. Riffraff says more people didn't vote than did. 38.21% voter participation in Beaches East York, 42.2% in Chicoutimi, and 28%, even lower, in North Vancouver. But this is not a rebuttal. By-elections have low voter turnout in any regard, unless the public is motivated. There were some by-elections that occurred back in 2021 because many voters were motivated by the draconian measures that were coming down during the C-19 era, and they turned out to vote a protest vote for the PPC, and the PPC did surprisingly strong. Now, look, I'm not advocating for the PPC. Heaven forbid. It's a corporatocracy designed to do one thing, make money. It's not designed to win elections. That's why, I mean, they barely even show. I think one place last night, they had single-digit support. It's over for the PPC. But at the time, they were making political capital by taking a stand against lockdowns and masking, even though they were happy to promote both of those things before they discovered it was a cash cow. But I digress. The people were motivated. And so those by-elections saw a lot more voter participation. The only thing that these low numbers tell us is that the voting public that might vote against the Liberal Party isn't motivated. Just to read through a couple more comments, Mr. Green, who is a valued contributor, he's always writing comments, I'm reading them. Enough of the voting public doesn't mind having their country taken from them, so why not? In a sense, that's true. But in another sense, I don't think most of the voting public understands that's what's happening. Like I said, the Federalist urge is rising, and all the reason, all the points, all the facts of the matter, the location of Carney's family, the location of his career, what built him, what made him, the process of bringing him in here, turning the taxpayer into a private investment fund. I mean, I can't believe Liberals are falling for this. I can't believe the people who usually champion, let's just call it that, champion the public sector, champion teachers, champion public sector unions, champion the middle class, are giving an asset manager carte blanche to do whatever he wants with the tax dollars. He's cutting your services. He's cutting the public service. He's firing public service employees. He's told you that there's going to be austerity. He's told you that you have to live with less. And he's taking the money that he's saving and not not eliminating the deficit. Heaven forbid. He's taking that money and he's investing it in private enterprise, which will benefit the holdings that he has in his portfolio. None of it seems to matter. So I'm not sure they know, or they're very resistant to finding out. Mr. Green also says, not that the conservatives would have been any different, especially when it comes to Trump. I spent some time lurking in the comment section of the National Telegraph's Wyatt Claypool's live stream last night. And I love Wyatt. I think that I said this last night. I think that he's a canary in the coal mine. We may not agree on everything, but we don't have to. Look, agreement is not the price of admission and the price of respect and the price of admiring somebody. Wyatt is exactly where the Conservative Party should be trying to go. To take steps in the right direction, Wyatt is on one of those steps. And he ran for the Conservative Party nomination in the riding of, I believe it was Calgary, Nose Hill. I think that was the riding. But he went through the process. He sold the memberships. He did the door knocking. And he looked like he might be competitive. And the Conservative Party came along and said, no, you're not allowed to run. They kicked him out. And of course, they kept the money that he made when he was selling those memberships. And the reason he got kicked out is because he's too risky. Wyatt Claypool, too risky, because he might go off script. That's one of the things I like about Wyatt, is he is, some people say he's just pure mainstream. He goes off script. He's very disciplined. He's very self-controlled. And yes, he speaks in the way that, in a way that politicians speak. He's very careful with his words, but he's exactly where they need to go. He's a little bit more risky, but the Conservative Party is too risk-averse for Wyatt Claypool. Blows my mind. And ever since then, the best things about Pierre Poilievre's leadership have taken the back burner while he's turned into talking points Pierre. The second something happens, the second the Carney government does anything, Pierre Poilievre, unleashed, should be able to come out and make a statement and say something. But oftentimes it takes him 24 to 48 hours to 72 hours just to formulate a response because they got to be so damn careful. They don't want to offend anybody. And you look at the results. They're not winning the public mind. They're not making the argument. They're not taking a bold position and fighting for it. They're just trying to hang on. And I'll tell you, defense is not as good as offense. Offense is the best defense. So they could have, to answer Mr. Green's observation, the Conservative Party could have taken a stance. I've said this before, and I'll say it again right now. When they went into the election, and since, they could have said, look at the damage the Liberal Party has done to the relationship that Canada has with the United States. The best relationship in the history of the world. Maybe that's a bit of political theater, but I actually think it's pretty close to the truth. The best relationship in history. One that advantages Canada massively. We've done very well by the Americans. Even though it disadvantages us in certain areas, the Americans definitely use their influence to keep our energy flows going south. They have their reasons for doing that. But overall, the relationship has been advantageous. And they've even let us protect our various aspects of our agricultural sectors. They've allowed us to protect our love affair with cartels. And that party has stopped. And the Conservatives could have very easily blamed the Liberal Party for the failure of that relationship. And they would have been accurate to do so. But they didn't take that track. They didn't campaign on repairing the relationship. They were only too happy to throw Trump under the bus, just like everybody else, because instead of trying to convince the public of the superiority of your ideas, using your platform as the leader of the opposition, having the media at your beck and call and command, and creating conflict with that media on a daily basis to keep your name in the spotlight and to communicate your ideas, they decided they would cater to the left again, cater to the Liberal voter again. So they come to the West, they get all their seats, they raise all their money out here, they get all their treasure out here. When Pierre Poilievre loses his seat, where does he go? He goes to Alberta to take a seat there, and then uses his platform to tell Alberta and Saskatchewan as a colliery that we have to engage it with our Stockholm syndrome and stay in an abusive relationship with Ottawa. They take everything from Western Canada, and then they go east and kiss Liberal ass. And that's been a failing strategy for over a decade, and they're still engaged with it today. So to say, Mr. Green, not that they would have been any different, you're right, you're not wrong, but they could have been different. And they chose not to yet again. Keith Maximum says there was 10,000 that didn't vote. It's a by-election. People tend to stay home, especially when they're not politically motivated to send a message. And they're not. Whether you and I are or not does not matter. What the audience thinks and what I think doesn't matter. The overall polity, the collection of millions, believes, whether it's right or wrong, that Carney is the savior. And it's wild to me. Moving on, let's talk about Line 5. For those of you who don't know, Line 5 moves a lot of petrochemicals that Ontario depends on. Ontario, that has a premier that's telling the president to kiss his ass, even though Ontario is very dependent on the United States. Canada is very dependent on the United States. Let's not mince words. We need each other. Now, the Americans, we can hurt them. Don't believe anybody if they say that Canada is powerless when it comes to the United States. I don't believe I've ever said that. If those words have come out of my mouth in a moment of passion, I was wrong. We can hurt them. But they can hurt us more. Far more. Exponentially more. And it's by design. That's what our leaders, the liberals and the conservatives, have built this country into. We are integrated in North America. It's not about to change. It's the reality of geopolitics. And this whole farce is bad news for the people. Semi-truck crash ruptures Line 5 pipeline in Wisconsin, causing gas leak. Now, Line 5 has been on my radar for a long time because it's an older pipeline. It requires maintenance. It could fail. It could fail and cause catastrophic environmental damage, but also disrupt energy supplies. This was before this stupid flame war erupted between Canada and the United States. Stupid from the perspective of people. It's not stupid from the perspective of Carney or Doug Ford, or even the Trump administration, which I still continue to think that there's more evidence than not that they are working together in tandem to create conditions for Canada to be more easily dominated by other nations, including the United States. I don't want to be dominated by China. I don't want to be dominated by India. I don't want to be dominated by a failing EU that I think is going to collapse within years, or a Great Britain that's broke, or an EU that is dedicated to total self-immolation. I think things really have to change for me to want to establish a deeper relationship. There's also the Atlantic Ocean that prevents closer ties. Literally, we can't get closer. I mean, continental drift, if we want to expand our timeline out millions and billions of years, maybe we could get closer eventually. But anyway, the semi-truck crash ruptures Line 5, and so Line 5 is now shut down. They're targeting early September for repairs to get it going. Line 5 transports light crude and NGLs from Superior, Wisconsin to Sarnia, Ontario, spanning across 645 miles. Now, what I think in the midst of this flame war could happen is Line 5 is shut down for repairs right now. What if those repairs just happen to get extended? Remember the 300,000 barrels we talked about a day that has gone offline for maintenance in Alberta? I don't think that that pre-planned maintenance is the play. I think the Carney government was targeting their rejection of U.S. demands to coincide with the perception that they're going to cause pain to the United States. We talked about Venezuela yesterday and how all of the rhetoric and all the words around Venezuela and replacing eventually Alberta is a long play. It's not going to happen tomorrow morning. People are reacting to it like it's going to happen imminently. It can't. And then I saw there was somebody in the comment section on my video yesterday was saying, you know, if we can do it here in Canada, if we can expand pipelines in Canada within a certain amount of time with heavy capital investment and labor deployment, we can do it in Venezuela too. You can't make a side-by-side comparison between Canada and Venezuela and say that they are identical circumstances. They're very different. And even though the crude has similarities, there are some key differences in terms of sulfur content. It's not a one-to-one comparison. Venezuela is going to take time, and it's certainly not going to influence events right now in terms of rising diesel prices. We're in harvest season. Everybody's paying more to get that crop off. That input cost is going to get passed on in the price of grain, and there's already a grain shortage. So in the end, the people who are targeted by this propaganda, the very people who don't understand these things, the mom and pops who don't have time or don't have an interest, the people who are going to pay the price coming into winter and into spring for this increased cost because of this stupid war, they're the ones that are they're the ones that bear the burden. They're the ones that you want to save with understanding, and you can't. At any rate, it wouldn't surprise me if Line 5 doesn't come back online right away, that the repairs get extended and all of these little accidents of coincidence start piling up as we engage with a more painful relationship with the United States, a needlessly painful relationship, at least from the perspective of people. And this is where I get angry. I always get angry. A trade breakdown between Canada, this is from Forbes, Enbridge Line 5 importance. This was from the 27th. The trade breakdown between Canada and the United States has escalated into tit-for-tat sanctions, highlighting critical shared infrastructure like the Enbridge Line 5 pipeline. Canada threatens to halt potash and uranium exports. Canada, the country, threatens to nuke Saskatchewan. We're going to turn Saskatchewan into a ballistic missile, an economic ballistic missile. We're going to fire it at the United States and blow the whole damn province up so that the East can prove a point, so that Eastern governance can prove it. But, oh, man, it makes me irritated, especially if this stuff bothered me when I lived there. It bothers me even more now that I live here. However, and Ontario's premier suggests withholding oil. So we'll nuke Alberta while we're at it. First, we'll fire the ballistic missile of Saskatchewan. Then we'll fire Alberta. They'll be blown up. The cash cow of transfer payments, sorry, equalization payments, that go to Ottawa from the West will be disrupted. I mean, I can't even believe Quebec would want to go along with it. The welfare checks would stop coming. But this is how they think. This is how Ford thinks. Use us as a weapon, and he doesn't have to bear the cost. It's all on us. This is why I think Smith and Moe both should be telling Ottawa to pound sand at this point, saying, we'll do what we want, and yeah, you control the border, but we're just going to ignore that, and we'll make a bilateral relationship with the United States on our own. And if you think, well, they can't do that, it would be illegal. Scott Moe's repeal and removal of the carbon tax from home heating fuel was illegal and unlawful, and he did it, and he succeeded, because federalism in this country ain't that strong. The provinces need to claim their autonomy. There's all this talk from the Conservative Party and from the Liberal Party that the way to solve Canada's problem is to strengthen federalism and destroy provincial power. So they want to focus on things like interprovincial trade barriers. I don't think these things are unimportant. I think we're moving past them. If you had to talk to me in 2019, I would have communicated a different message because the times were different. Now we're getting down to crunch time. We got these idiots that want to tank the Canadian economy to prove a point to our most beneficial trade partner. Look, I got to say it again, and I'm sorry if I'm a broken record. We do very good by the United States. We could show some gratitude. We could show some humility. There's supposed to be this famous Canadian politeness. Where the hell is that in this relationship? We've shown none, and people will say, well, Trump isn't very polite either. I'm with you, but America's not Trump. The relationship is not Trump. In 2029, Trump is gone. Hell, his government, his administration, if things go the way they look like they're going to go in November, is going to be checked and balanced all to hell from 2026 to 2028. Actually, January, when everybody gets sworn in. Oh, it's such a bigger idea than Donald Trump. The person of Donald Trump is enabling some really bad actors to make political capital in this country, starting with Carney, but working the way down. However, closing Line 5 would severely impact Canadian oil processing and jet fuel supply to major airports. This dispute complicates the pipeline's legal battle, where Michigan's governor seeks closure for environmental reasons while the Trump administration supports its continued operation. In that sense, and in that case, the Trump administration's position makes perfect sense. Look, we need oil. We got to get over this idea that we need to get rid of oil. We don't need to divest. Sure, we need to build out other technologies. We should be looking at nuclear. Nuclear is the best available technology. We can build it safe. We can build it complete. It can produce a lot of power. But idiots, ideological lightweights, don't like progress. And we need oil, and we're always going to need oil. It's ridiculous. So they're right about that. But Line 5 can be converted to a tool to make Ontario suffer. And Ontario's answer to suffering is to turn Saskatchewan and Alberta into weapons of war against the United States and sacrifice us to kick. Again, I'm repeating myself. We should be telling Ottawa to pound sand. CBCE, Canada's greatest media welfare recipient. They're all welfare recipients at this point. If you're on the media list, you're getting money from the federal government to produce copy. I don't know how that's not going to influence the kind of content that these news organizations put out when they're getting money directly from the feds, directly from the taxpayer. But CBC is the worst. We're talking a billion plus a year so that they can produce propaganda to feed to the public, and they resist properly calling 9/11 what it is. It's not quite the way it's been framed by the influencers, and I don't really want to get into it. That's why I haven't even commented on it, because it's not quite what everybody wants to make it look like. But CBC's bad enough. You can take the 9/11 thing right off the table, and they still produce nonsense every single day. But here they are crying. The Republican Party revokes CBC Radio Canada media accreditation for the upcoming midterm elections. Why? CBC's not free media. CBC is state media. Our prime minister has said we are at war with the United States because we've been attacked. Oh, we're such victims. Under those circumstances, why wouldn't the Republican Party revoke state media's presence there? And like, we're getting offended by this, but these are people who advocated the banning of Russian media, the banning of voices that don't agree with our particular political inclinations of the times. We had no problem with censorship. I mean, has anybody really made any copy on CBC about the censorship bills that have come down from the Carney government? No, but they're going to cry about the Republican Party. This is so predictable. And just so you understand, I want to talk about Iran again, because the United States bombed Larrick Island, and then the Iranians fired back, and once again, CENTCOM lied. They said they intercepted all the missiles, but we have the private civilian satellite data that shows that those missiles hit warehouses in Jordan. And I believe, as of now, yeah, the United States is now fully bombing southern Iran. I would anticipate the Iranians will respond in kind, and up the escalation ladder we go. So what you need to know, this is, I think, day 185. Of the 24 to 48 hour war, some say 96 hours was the beginning point. I mean, nobody knows. It was supposed to be over in days. The Iranian people were going to pour out in the streets with flowers and laurels, and they were going to lay it at the feet of the deceased and killed and murdered former supreme leader. That didn't happen. Iran's never been more united, and all of the myths that are coming out of the administration about the collapse of the Iranian regime couldn't be further from the truth, and we have all the evidence of our eyes. Anyway, they're bombing each other again, and last night, Iran successfully hit a tanker going through the Omani side. There's all of this. The administration is saying they're getting all kinds of transport traffic through the Omani side. It's not happening, not at the scale that they think. The Strait of Hormuz is still locked down. No, that's not the one I want. I wanted the one I had on screen. Vance says, U.S. now focused on free flow of commerce in Strait of Hormuz. Speaking to Fox News, he said that Sunday's strike on Larrick Island was intended to prevent Iran from placing mines in the strait. He accused Iran's leadership of acting not with a whole lot of strategic wisdom. Really? America? Really? Vance? Really? Trump? You're going to look at the Iranians and tell them they don't have strategic vision and wisdom? You idiots got involved in this war, which you campaigned on staying out of. And Trump made all kinds of statements in the past about how stupid this war would be. And yet here you are. I don't think you can point your finger at anybody and say there's no strategic wisdom, because this is the definition of strategic lack. It's incredible. But the point is, their main focus, which is a subtle shift of victory conditions, is to restore the Strait of Hormuz to its former operation. The operation that existed before the Americans committed a war of aggression. That's what it was. Not just in June of 25, but onwards into 26. This is a war of aggression. There's nothing defensive about it. If you believe it's defensive, You're hypnotized. You're propagandized. There's nothing defensive about it. It was a war of aggression, a war of offense. Bombing somebody under a flag of negotiation and diplomacy, the very definition of aggression, and murdering their leadership. Look, there is an unspoken understanding going back hundreds of years that you don't kill the leadership of nations. You capture them alive, you try them, but you don't commit political murder. Only the Americans do that, and they did it here, and somehow they expected, once they martyred the head of Shia Islam, and they thought it was going to lead to miraculous outcomes. At any rate, the war goal is now just reopening the strait, and they can't even do that. So forget regime change. Forget the nuclear program. Nobody's even talking about that anymore. Every now and again, Trump will throw out a word. They can't have a nuke. Well, good news, they don't have one. Not yet. They might have to get one soon. And for all the 20 years that we've been told by the Israelis, 30 years, and by everybody else that Iran was on the doorstep of getting a nuke, the entire time they renounced a nuclear weapons program. They had a fatwa that they gave to Shia Islam. People say, oh, they can lie. Well, anybody can lie. Anybody can lie. They do it all the time. But they would have to have lied to Shia, to the Shia Muslims, which they can't do. They agreed the day before the bombing began to downblend their enriched uranium under American supervision. They essentially agreed to everything the United States wanted, and they bombed them anyway. Lack of strategic vision. Vance, sit down, bud. Look at what you guys have done. And I wanted to go back to this because I talked about this article yesterday. Before I do, the hit of the tanker didn't even make any headlines. Nobody's even picked up that part. We've moved on to a stage where when Iran hits a tanker, Western media doesn't even pick it up. And now you've got Hegseth and the administration saying, we're moving on to a phase of the operation where we have to cut the lawn every so often. So every few weeks, we're going to do a bombing campaign to just keep the Iranians trimmed off. That's the definition of a forever war. The very thing that Trump said he wouldn't get into. I mean, we're 6 months in, for Christ's sake. Why do I even have to make this argument anymore? How can people possibly pretend that this has gone smashingly and according to plan? The United States empire is in shambles, and it always had to be deconstructed. This was inevitable. The myth of American supremacy in military arms has been shattered in Ukraine, to be completely honest. I mean, Ukraine is the future of warfare. I watched a video yesterday. There's a drone bot that's, I don't know if it was crawling along the ground. I think it was wheeled. And there was an anti-drone drone, so a Ukrainian anti-drone drone that was targeting it. And that drone sped up to fly in to blow it up, and that thing moved aside like Matrix style. This drone just shifted out of the way, and the other drone crashed into the ground, and the Russian drone robot just kept on moving. And, like, I get chills, because this is some disturbing shit. The future of warfare is even more bleak than... I used to think that artillery was probably the most bleak form of warfare because you got units that are literally miles away and they're just bombing with shells and there's pieces of people flying all over the place. It doesn't get much more anti-human, but now we're deploying the machines, and eventually we'll be deploying, I think the aim is to have them be controlled by artificial intelligence. In some cases they already are. And the thing that bugs me is I can see that Ukraine is at the forefront of modern warfare. And the Western nations have enabled them to develop some of the best weapon systems there are. And at the same time, the Russians have sharpened their teeth. They're winning the war. Every day, they're capturing dozens of square kilometers of territory from Ukraine. It's a grind. It's a meat grinder. It's tragic. It didn't need to happen. But it has created the conditions where modern warfare can be practiced, and the Ukrainians are at the forefront. And when the Trump administration came out shortly after coming into power, and Trump went on the record as saying, the form of warfare that they're engaged in that war is the most backwards on the planet. It's not modern warfare. He called it backwards and said it was technologically backwards and it was barbaric. Shows me that he does not understand the evolution of military theory happening right before our eyes. All the other nations of the world are far ahead, including Iran. That's why it managed, this Iranian nation managed to checkmate the world's greatest superpower. We're 6 months in. That's all the evidence you need. And if you're going to come in the comment section and be like, oh, you know, it's about Lloyd's of London. Guys, Lloyd's of London insures 7% of the world's shipping traffic. Okay? Maybe they're taking some losses. Fine. They're also collecting increased premiums. And on the backside of this, when this war is over, if the world is still here, Lloyd's is still going to be selling insurance. Stop repeating IntelliSlop without thinking about it. It just pisses me off to no end. I still see these comments. People have been following me for a long time, and they still don't get it. This magical theory that this is about the British Empire is an intelligence operation. It's just like Q. Anyway, I wanted to read a quote. Vice President Vance said Thursday night, talking about the national debt, $40 trillion in the United States, which it might as well be our national debt here in Canada. It might as well be Europe's national debt, because we're all built on the petrodollar Ponzi scheme, or we're backstopped by the U.S. dollar. So when we decide we want to turn Saskatchewan and Alberta into economic missiles and fire them at the United States, we're really just shooting ourselves, because we all live and die by the U.S. dollar. What we need is we need a reorganization. We need an actual soft kill plan for the U.S. dollar. And I've been saying this for 10 years, that something was going to change. We were going to move into a multipolar world, because the hegemonic moment has passed. Instead, we're getting entropy. Trudeau's favorite word. At any rate, talking about the debt, Vice President Vance says he, Bissent, has had a very discreet plan, of course, supported by the president, to get the United States to a point where our economy is growing faster than our debt. It's not really working out right now. And if you look, we are on track. See, this is political hyperbole. There's not an element of truth to it. All political parties engage in this. So even though the debt is too high, even though we inherited this debt bomb from the Biden administration, and I'm sorry, JD, but you've added something in the neighborhood of $2 to $2.5 trillion to that debt since you've been in office, and you've done nothing to stop the spiral. In fact, the war that you support has increased it. We actually do have a plan to get the economy growing faster than the debt. And that's the most important thing. So the subtle plan is, as Bissent said on Thursday, last Thursday, he claims the U.S. can just grow its way out of the national debt, which hit $40 trillion on Wednesday. Really? You think you can grow that fast? You'd have to grow faster than China did in its heyday, when it was printing money and faking numbers and actually had a growing economy at the same time. I'm also supposed to believe that China is on the verge of collapse. That's another interesting talking point. And yet everything that I see about China, and look, this is how you can do it. Instead of listening to news pundits and commentary, go look at travel blogs. Go look at what people are seeing in China. There's a guy that watches my videos. He'll probably see this. Canadian Spider-Man. You can ask guys like him about China. He does live streams. He can tell you what he saw when he was in China. And you can learn. You can learn about Iran. You can learn about China through the eyes of people who've actually been there and witnessed it and saw it and see what's happening, who are still uploading videos every single day. They don't talk politics so much. They just talk about reality on the ground. They film real life. And they can teach you a lot about the bullshit that's spewed from your politicians. There's nothing magic about the $40 trillion number, Bessent says. And we can grow our way out of that. Good luck. Now listen. I know my videos might come across as just a bunch of doom and gloom, because I'm very critical of many different aspects of the life we all collectively live together. But I just want to give you a reminder. This is the best time in human history to be alive. That's one of the reasons I get so pissed off about this stuff. It's really good. You have all the information you could ever want, anything you want to learn. You want to learn how to disassemble a straight six in a 1982 Ford and how to rebuild that? There's a YouTube video for that. There's 1,000 articles. Hell, AI can rip them off and tell you how to do it, and you can do it in your own garage. Anything you can imagine, you can do. You still have widespread, even if it's getting more expensive, you have widespread availability of food in supermarkets that you can just go and buy. When we talk about stocking up, we're not talking about saving more of next year's crop and holding it over and like long-term planning because we have to produce everything because we're a subsistence culture. No, you just go to the store and you buy it and you put it away. Pretty sweet, right? You have widespread availability of credit. If you actually think the situation is going to get bad enough, you can borrow some money at relatively low interest rates, and you can buy things that I think when it comes to food and staples, and I'm not telling you what to do, but when it comes to food and staples, if you're borrowing money for 5 or 6% interest, you might be ahead of inflation to pay the interest payments on some borrowed money to buy the food now, and you probably save money in the long run. That's a thought process that you can go through yourself. I've gone through it. I've done the math, and I think it's a fairly safe bet considering the state of global crops right now. And it's not just information availability. We live, in spite of the increases in crime that I talk about on this channel, in spite of the fact that the Iran war is very disturbing, in spite of the threat of nuclear war on a day-to-day basis, these are the most peaceful times in human history. Going back thousands of years, I mean, maybe Augustan Rome and the 100 years after the end of the Civil War, maybe that's similar. But that only covered a portion of the earth. It's a fairly peaceful time to be alive. All these countries that we're taught to hate, China, the Arab countries, they actually have the safest cities on the planet. Maybe I'll look at that tomorrow. None of the safest cities on the planet exist in North America or Europe. Not anymore. But there is safety and there is refuge to be found all over the face of the Western world for you, wherever you are. So I'm still very thankful for the times that I live in. And I want to make that clear that I'm not trying to instill in you a sense of doom. I'm trying to talk about the things that threaten long-term, short-term, and medium-term, this very thing that I value so much, which is life in 2026 with all of its blemishes. I'm Frank Vaughn. I'm thankful for you. I'll see you in the next one. Did you know that I have a website, frankvaughn.ca, the ultimate repository for all of my work, and a backup location just in case the censors come for me again? And if you like the content, please consider using the donate link in one of the options available. There are no paywalls, there is no advertising, and there is no Patreon, and I intend to keep it that way. Thank you for your time and your consideration.